This is Remote Patrol. I'm Jason Hawk. He's Richard Smith. She's Allison Downing. And I'm in serious trouble tonight. I can already tell. I think Allison's probably going to reach through the interwebs and just bash my head in with her fist. I do not see a positive outcome for tonight.
I'm really scared about this, man. I'm really scared.
Like, I'm sorry in advance. I apologize to all of Britannia.
We're talking about Father Ted?
Yeah, we're talking about Father Ted, for better or worse. I say worse.
I don't get this. I just don't. Because Father Ted is a monolithic comedy show from Great Britain. Well, Ireland.
Monolithic meaning it only has one joke and it just hammers that joke over and over and over again?
No. No.
No. It's huge. It's a huge show. Massively popular. Won lots of awards. Ended in tragedy. It's perfect.
8.7 out of 10 on IMDb.
8.7, Jason. What's going on in your mind?
What's going on in my mind is that clearly there's some sort of a east of the Atlantic bias going on here. I don't think that enough Americans have seen it to bring the score down properly the way that it should be. And I think that we've talked about this before. Sometimes the things that we love really jive, right? Yeah. Sometimes we see things very, very clearly together. We're united. We hold hands across the pond. We're the best of friends. Sometimes our senses of humor just don't gel. And I think that that's really where it comes down to. It's we get drama. We both like the same kind of drama. If you give us both a gangster movie, we're both going to like a gangster movie.
Yeah.
If you give us both a comedy, or I'm sorry, a romance rather, we're probably both going to like the same kind of romance. If you give us both a sci-fi, we're probably going to both like the same kind of sci-fi. But comedy, man, it's just this ineffable thing. What is comedy? What is funny? Why are things funny? What makes something, what makes you laugh? And what is, when is absurdity good? How does absurdity work? These things, I just don't think that we see them the same way that you do.
I think you're right.
Entirely as nations.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
We've adopted certain things that you've sent over here. We like Monty Python, by and large, you know?
Has anybody managed to do a US kind of style of Monty Python?
God, no.
Or have they just left it alone and said, we can't even go there?
You can't do that. It's
pure import.
I think you guys like Monty Python more than we do. Like, we've got nothing against Monty Python, but no one's quoting it anymore.
It wasn't a time. Our parents' generation still quote it, but we don't. It hasn't lived on.
I think that Monty Python, you probably see a skewed version of how much America likes it, because the type of people that you talk to are nerds. They're online people, tend to skew very young. And I think Monty Python really appeals to people who are between the ages of about 10 and 25 in America, and probably of a geek subset.
I'm reliably informed that had it not been for Monty Python, I might not be here now.
Really?
There was apparently at one point a blazing row between my parents before I was born, a kind of breaking up level of row.
Crikey.
And in anger, they were both sat in silence in front of the television until Dennis Moore started playing. And then it apparently got them to the point where they couldn't not laugh and talk to each other and made up. And now there's a podcast network. Okay. Sorry I told that story. Moving on then. So,
superimposing the crickets. But Monty Python, that's one of the things that I was thinking about when I was sitting there absolutely hating Father Ted the entire time. I was thinking, okay, clearly this is an absurdist humor show. Why do I like things like Monty Python? Why do I like things like the British version of the IT Crowd? Why do I like maybe like Cheers and Seinfeld? American shows that are based on, you know, very small locations. Father Ted, it's set in pretty much just the tiny little, what do you even call it?
Parochial house.
It's not a nunnery. That would be where nuns live.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Cheers is restricted to a bar. Seinfeld is a show about nothing. And I kind of get the same thing about Father Ted. I mean, there's a premise and there's not much else. There's not a running plot to the show.
Oh,
so
God,
why do I like those and I don't like this?
I'm kind of more curious about why you like the IT Crowd and not this, because the IT Crowd, written by the same people, is basically Father Ted in an office.
Yeah. Graham Linehan is the same writer, the same creator.
And I, you see, that's why I was optimistic. I know we have this divide with comedy. I'm very much aware of it. But I thought, given I knew you liked the IT crowd, and I knew that generally that had gone down quite well in America, and I just figured, if you like that, how can you not like Father Ted? Because it's almost the same show.
Well, let's start from the beginning. I mean, full disclosure, I did not watch a lot of Father Ted. I watched as much as I could possibly stomach, which included season one, episodes 1 through 3.
Okay.
And then season 3, episode 3, speed 3.
See, now, I think speed 3 is one of the finest 25 minutes of television ever created, from beginning to end. It never misses a trick.
It was the best of the four that I watched.
Right, okay.
Like, because at least it was getting away from just sight gags. And though there were sight gags in it, definitely. When absurdism has some sort of a goal, like parody, it works better than just absurdism for absurdism's sake. Is absurdism a word? Absurdity. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, now that, I think, there's an area of the divide. We like absurdity for the sake of it.
Sometimes it works. Monty Python, of course, being a perfect example.
That is the best example of it, but we like it a lot. And
shows over here that are based on absurdity. You've got like 30 Rock, right? Everything in that show is, hey, look how wacky the characters are.
That's not absurd.
No, that's nothing
really,
like it.
That is not anywhere near the level of absurdity that we get to in British comedy.
The stuff I'm thinking about wouldn't stand a chance of getting over to America.
Baldrick. The entire character of Baldrick.
How does Blackadder go down over there?
Well, first, you have to understand culturally with British shows, the way that they're usually imported is on public television. So PBS is our version of the BBC, but it's nowhere near. It's so incredibly low rent compared to the BBC. PBS is what you watch Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers and children's television programming and like the national, the public news on. That's where British shows get imported and aired.
It's your ITV. That's what it
is. Yeah.
So right away, as soon as something comes over, it already has this kind of grade on it. Like, okay, this only cost $1.99 for them to get. That's why it's airing. Right. It's cheap. Yeah. That's why it's on public television. So you're already looking at it through that. I don't think that I've ever seen anybody who came away from watching it on PBS and said, you know what, that Blackadder show, that's the best show ever. I think it's a curiosity that most Americans look at, cock their heads slightly and say, well, I liked Mr. Bean.
See, but even that's not, you know, look at the guy on Buzzcock, Noel Fielding.
Noel Fielding.
And think of his show. That plays perfectly well. No, the one he did on his own on E4. The one that was clearly, here's a load of money, go away and do whatever the fuck you want. And just stuff like that, it just wouldn't get a chance. And it's so absurd.
Yeah.
Into the world of surrealism.
I think the Mighty Boosh is absurd enough.
Mighty Boosh is the same. That can't have ever played in America because collapsed.
I don't think anybody will get that there.
It would have been the end of the world.
Vic and Bob, like, how do they go over? Surely not.
Have you ever heard of Vic Reeves, Jason?
Has he been in the IT crowd?
Right, no. Then. No.
Okay.
And of course, but it's some of the most...
Shooting Stars is a ridiculously good TV show, but it's not going to work. You're not going to like it. It's not going to be funny. It's
God, the stuff I could show you. I could tell you, like, this is an important part of people's lives, and you'll be just like, what the fuck is this? Especially Shooting Stars.
Most Americans would probably recognize the name Fawlty Towers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And wouldn't be able to tell you really what it's about. Some people, like a tiny, teeny percentage, would probably recognize, like, Are You Being Served?
Yeah,
and know that it's like Drew Carey, the Drew Carey show, in some respect.
Right.
I think most people that you talk to would probably recognize the name Monty Python, but probably wouldn't be able to tell you really much about it other than, hey, wasn't that one guy that was in James Bond?
Right.
Or be able to maybe quote something from the Holy Grail.
It's very odd that this doesn't get...
We've known about irony for a long time. Like, the British use of irony in comedy is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. and it's natural. And I've been watching a show recently by an American dude. He's called Reginald D. Hunter. And he was born in Georgia, but left 17 years ago to come and live in England. And he's learned to do it now. It's natural to him now, but he says when he goes home, he has to consciously switch off that side of his brain that says funny things in that kind of way because no one gets it.
Yeah.
And I've always thought it was maybe kind of overplayed, but I don't think it is. Now that we're having this conversation, it feels like there's a great deal of stuff that would just not work for you guys at all.
It just doesn't. We don't see it through the screen of humor that you do. But here's your chance. I mean, evangelize to my American brethren. Tell me why Father Ted is good. I mean, probably, first of all, you should start off by explaining the entire setup of the show. What is Father Ted? What's it about?
It's an insanely simple premise. We have three Catholic priests living together in a parochial house in a very remote Irish island.
Craggy Island.
Called Craggy Island. And the three priests consist of, you've got the sort of middle-aged main character, Father Ted Crilly. You've got his young, imbecilic counterpart, Father Dougal Maguire. And then you've got the aged, drunk priest who just sits around being drunk all day and can say four words. And basically every week is just a different situation they get into. As like you said, there's no overarching plot. There's no character development of any kind whatsoever. It's just, here's a different situation. We'll put these people in this week. They will behave in the way that we expect them to behave, and it'll be hilarious. I'm forgetting that they also live with their rather enthusiastic housekeeper, Mrs. Doyle, who loves making tea more than anything else in the entire world. That's it. That's the show.
And the reason why it's funny is because it's really, really good sending up the establishment, especially religion. So we like taking the piss out of the clergy, especially Catholics.
There's one of the two aspects of the show that I really did actually like. And you know my proclivities toward religion. I do not like it in any way. And I thought, okay, well, it introduces me to these three people who each in their own way are very, very bad priests. You have the old one who's drunk, who's shouting gobshite and feck off every 10 seconds, right? You have Father Ted, who's supposedly a con artist, who I liked the aspect of his personality that the writers say that they were, every time that they possibly could, they would have him lie to try to get out of a bad situation, and that it would only ever work against him.
Yeah.
I liked that. And then you had the third one that was just stupid, and I don't like that character archetype at all. I mean, it seems like there's, in every sitcom, there's just the plain dumb character, and it's, you're laughing at someone who is mentally challenged.
The thing with Dougal is, though, he's so dumb, and it never makes sense. There's certain levels of, if he was always as dumb as he is at his dumbest, he wouldn't be able to dress himself, let alone become a priest. You know, if he couldn't grasp the best, one of the favorite quotes is where Ted's trying to explain to him that cows outside are small because they're far away, and yet the ones inside are little toy ones, and they're small because they're small. And you think, well, if you couldn't grasp this concept, then you can't function as a human being. It never quite makes sense, Dougal's stupidity.
He's so stupid, it becomes absurd, therefore it edges up in comedy.
And the dynamic between them, sometimes they're best friends, sometimes Ted has a very parental role. You know, Dougal's the kind, he's a priest, but he still has a Masters of the Universe duvet cover and that sort of thing, and a pet hamster that rides a bike and so many other things. I've lost my train of thought completely now.
What I love about Dougal, though, is when he actually gets down to having a conversation about Christianity and the Bible and some of the stories in it, that he comes to the realization that he doesn't actually believe in God.
Oh, there's numerous occasions of, it's all bollocks. Well,
it's
though,
just
really.
Rubbish, isn't it? It's just made up, isn't it?
I saw a couple of occasions where they were just showing the priests as being people and not as priests. And I mean, at any point in the show, do they actually show them doing a mass?
Not really. There's no,
I mean, other than the one in Speed 3.
Yeah, that's the most you'll ever get of anything like a mass.
a drive-by mass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's making me laugh right now, just thinking about it. And I've seen it 800 times. But the whole bit where he's enthusiastically drawing his plan on the blackboard and it just says, we put the brick on the accelerator pad. It's just all brilliant.
I do like showing priests as being just pretty shitty people, you know, conniving and petty. And I think that's where a lot of the humor that I liked from the show came from. That could fill a thimble. That entire amount that I liked could just, you know, almost fill a thimble, maybe.
I think you'll find more of it if you watch more. You know, there's a great deal of debasement of these priests.
There's a number of times there'll be someone call from the Vatican. And when you see the Vatican, it's just a fucking disco inside.
It looks like a strip joint.
There's people drinking and dancing. There's all kinds of things going off inside. It's brilliant. They never let up for a second. I'm enjoying it.
One of my favorite ones is where a whole cadre of them, about 20 of them, get stuck in a department store lingerie section. And they're just all mortified and can't find a way out. And it turns into some kind of escape action movie.
It turns into a Vietnam movie,
it's
basically.
Wonderful. And they're all sweating. And
like, no one can see the priest in the lingerie section. That would be scandal.
And now, see, when you explain that, that sounds funny. I am sitting here kind of giggling at the image that I'm making up for myself in my head. But when they execute that sort of thing on the screen, there's just so much going against it. The cardboard characters, the Dougal being so stupid that he can't operate. That might be a plus for you. American humor works the other way. That's just weak writing. You know, the cheapness of the sets, all these things just.
But that's a very British thing as well. That is kind of a British sitcom thing. That, you know, you can fall into a bookcase and it's going to splinter into a thousand pieces.
To be honest, I think it was just really low budget when it first was made.
And
it has since become part of it.
We're looking at a really, really poor set of three priests who are in the arse end of nowhere in a really, really crappy parish. And they've got a really shitty house that hasn't been decorated since 1963.
Now, yeah, if you put it in terms of style, from the sets to the outfits, that part's forgivable since it's kind of talking about how backward the entire people of Craggy Island are. I get that part. But the part that threw me off from the very beginning is that this is a show that's made 1995 to 1998. It looks like it was made in 1982.
Yeah, it does kind of.
But that's Ireland for you at the time as well. You know, it was a snapshot of, this is kind of a land frozen in time. The first episode where the fun fair comes to town and it's the least fun fair you've ever seen in your life was a whole piss take about these communities. They're so backwards. They do wear clothes from the 80s because they haven't seen shops. They haven't been anywhere. They don't. There's no world outside of this craggy island where the weather is always awful and no one ever seems to leave. And if you do leave, then you're a celebrity in some way.
And that's about the closest that it comes to social commentary, and I kind of I didn't mind those parts too bad. But when I say that it looks like it's from 82, I mean, it's shot dark. It's the poorest quality film. I mean, I thought that this was a contemporary of All in the Family.
No. It's disturbs me to think it's 20 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
That's something. But yeah. It wasn't great quality when it came out.
It wasn't. It's dark because it's always grey on Craggy Island as well. There's not a sunny day shot there, really. You get a little bit of sun coming through some clouds.
The weather is truly
horrible on Craggy Island. You know, it's always raining or just grey.
There's only one colour, it's grey. Have you read the critical reception section of Wikipedia?
No.
I know you haven't. I was asking Jason, but...
I glanced through that, and I also paid a lot more attention to the user reviews on IMDb, which it just seemed that people were over the moon for it on there. As a matter of fact, there was one guy who on there said, I just don't get it, echoing exactly my feelings, and someone else called him out and just started calling him stupid. Hey, you're a complete fucking moron if you don't get this show. And so I kind of do feel demoralized from that aspect.
No, that's just one tit on the internet, isn't it?
At the end of the day, you find funny what you find funny, and no one can tell you that you should be laughing at something. At the same time, it's fucking funny, but it's funny for my sense of humor. I'd be fair to say it has shaped some of my sense of humor. I'm kind of surprised that we have any American listeners, you know, Like, our humor has always been extremely British.
Yeah, I guess.
And almost abusive towards each other and all kinds of things. And I'm surprised that that has ever translated. If Father Ted doesn't, then, you know, why does movies you should see? But
I think that Father Ted, the characters don't like each other enough. They don't act in redeemable ways. I mean, they really are shitty people. I mean, they don't do anything that should endear them to you. Father Jack does nothing good the entire time. Cardboard character. Ted is constantly screwing over his compatriots to try to get ahead. Doesn't really do anything that's showing empathy or an outpouring of love or, you know, no act of sacrifice of any kind. You know, nothing that would endear him to you. I think maybe you guys have some sort of a weird inferiority complex where you identify with characters who are bad people.
We do like our bad people characters. We really do. And now you mention it, I'm ending up thinking of lots from British comedy where your main characters are quite despisable people. A bit of a nasty streak.
Yeah, because Ted's all about being famous and rich, really, and he wants more money.
And the money was just resting in his account.
It was just resting in his account. You know, he wants to take every opportunity he can to be on television or be in the Song for Europe with a really terrible song. And he's got a fame. And there's a guy, there's Larry Duff, who he phones a lot. And this is a trope that goes on all the way through all the series. Is Larry Duff has got quite a nice life, but he's got a mobile phone and he's always in the middle of doing something quite dangerous when Ted tries to call him, and then the inevitable accident happens. But Larry's got the life that he loves. And what I really love as well is that this recipe for these three priests, the strange, babbling old fella who's just reduced to grunts and four words, and the idiotic young one who doesn't even believe in God, and the man in the middle who's trying to be the suave, sophisticated priest who does the best masses and is famous in all the land. It's a recipe in each parochial house.
It is. You know, I have to just jump us back to that last point about dislikable characters. I've just done a search on Google for the best British comedy TV shows, and it's just to get a list.
Yeah.
And
Blackadder. Well, hang on.
Right now, just from the ones it's thrown up, you've got Peep Show. Oh, totally dislikable characters.
Both of them are horrible. Yeah. All of them are horrible.
The Office with David Brent. Basil Fawlty in Fawlty Towers.
Awful guy.
Blackadder. Awful. Father Ted is on the list.
Yeah.
The Young Ones.
Rick's awful.
One Foot in the Grave.
Yeah, he's awful.
Black Books.
Oh, God, yeah, Dylan Moran's
absolutely
character.
Absolutely fabulous. The Thick of It, Keeping Up Appearances. It just goes on and on and on. And these are all totally Steptoe and Son. It goes back to my parents' childhood. I'm Alan Partridge. These are all totally despicable human beings.
Yeah.
And we love all of them. You know, look how amazing Fawlty Towers is. And what redeeming features does Basil Fawlty have? Absolutely none.
Well, he's hilarious because he can't cope.
Yeah.
He melts down and his downfall is funny. It's real bad schadenfreude, really. That's what it is. We like to see their downfall and their comeuppance because it's funny.
The In-Betweeners. It's all of them. The only ones where it's not the case is Only Fools and Horses and panel shows.
Yeah, but even Derek Trotter, he's trying to, you know, do out his own family for money and friends and stuff like that. He ain't the clean-cut guy.
I know, but you have enough to end it. You like them. You absolutely like Del Boy and Rodney. There's no question about that. Yeah, they're wheeler-dealer market people, and they nick shit and stuff like that, but at no point do you wish them anything other than well. They're totally likable characters, and you have those moments of redeeming, and you see their sensitive side, and you go with them through their ups and downs. Mm. They're not as one-dimensional at all, and I think it's because they made it forever, and you had to put some of that stuff in.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Father Ted would have gone that way if they kept making it, but I don't know how long they'd have kept making it. You know, It's all very odd, this.
Yeah.
I thought you'd like it.
I'm trying to think about how all this would work, talking about despicable characters in America, and I just really think that we're too white hat, black hat for that to work in almost all cases. But even the ones that I can think of, and there's one special exception that I'll get to in a minute, but when we're talking about just comedies, you've got things like Arrested Development, where there's a lot of despicable characters, but you still have the one at the core. You still have Michael, who is the one that's trying to redeem the family. He's the most upstanding of them all, and even though he does a lot of crappy things, he's always trying to be the good one. Mm-hmm. Or you have things like the American version of The Office, like we talked about, was that last week?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You take David Brent, a truly despicable person whose job it is on that show in the UK to make everyone as uncomfortable as possible, and you transform him into Michael Scott, someone who does, he makes everyone uncomfortable because he just genuinely needs to be loved.
Yeah.
And you turn him into that kind of a redeemable character. And by the time he leaves the show at the end of season 6, I think, you've grown to love him so much, and everyone in the office has too. Now, the one big exception is that Americans do kind of have a love affair with crime. So whenever it comes to gangsters, whether that be, you know, drug dealers or mafiosos, we kind of embrace them. It's cool to want to be a member of the Godfather's family.
Yeah, we have that too.
Yeah.
I think we can certainly sympathize with characters that commit a lot of crime.
But when it's just comedy, I can't for the life of me think of any character in American comedy, and people will probably come up with dozens and dozens and dozens of them. I'm just not doing a very good job on the spot, but I can't think of one character in American comedy who is just terrible for terrible's sake, and that's the lead character of the show, and they never get a redeemable human moment.
No, I can't. It's got to be. They're all very... Even when you have sitcoms where there are a lot of absurd characters, you still have to have that one normal person in the middle. Mm. That kind of, here's you in that situation.
Well, in One Foot in the Grave, Margaret is the foil to Victor Meldrew's horrific elderly behavior.
But I'm thinking more like, so in The Office, as we said last week, you can have all those weird crazy people as long as you've got Jim and Pam. And
sure, because there has to be a yin to the yang. There has to be a light in order for there to be darkness.
That's the difference. We're okay with it not being like that. I think that's what it is. Mm. We can have these three characters, which none are likable, but we're on their side and we just want to see them do the thing that they do that makes us laugh. And it's just a difference in what we're comfortable with. I think, and it must just be based on previous content. Really, when you think about it, what, you know, because inherently we kind of have the same values in life and that sort of thing. So why would we be different?
It goes all the way back to Shakespeare, if we're honest. There's quite a lot of really barbed sarcasm and irony and fools who have the upper hand and that kind of thing. So it's been in British writing forever.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, yes, there is that kind of gallows humor. That we're
sure, there's
quite
gallows
good
humor,
at.
But it's always on the side. That's always the part that's supposed to appeal to the groundlings. When you get to the royal characters, they always have a modicum of decency about them. They have some sort of a quality that pulls you back and says, these are people of royal stature. Can you think of a Shakespearean play where it's just dicks everywhere? Everywhere you look, it's just nothing but a bag of dicks?
there's quite a lot of dicks. In Hamlet, let's be honest.
That's my favorite thing you've ever said on a podcast.
There's a great deal of dicks. We're getting towards a clutch bag full of dicks in Othello, if we're honest. You know, real nasty characters. Iago's a piece of shit, isn't he?
I always felt bad for Julius Caesar. I'm not somebody who can sit and discuss anything Shakespeare.
You've been to see Othello with me and
is that
with
Summer Night's Dream?
Yeah, we went to see it. It was the guys from The Wire, remember?
I remember I saw The Wire live.
Yeah, The Wire live.
I definitely remember I saw
Seriously.
That.
Seriously.
As to what they did, not a fucking thing. I'm sorry. I'm such a heathen. It's disgusting. I'm so sorry. I have to apologize for how shit I am, but
honestly,
it doesn't go in. I don't know what to tell you. It doesn't go in. I have tried many of them and in different ways, like film ones and ones that have been contemporized and ones that have been made weird and plays with people I know in them and reading the books, and none of it, absolutely none of it, has stayed in my brain. But I remembered what the opening line from that 1972 episode of Columbo was. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what it's to tell weird. You. It just doesn't go in, and it's not through lack of
more
trying.
Thingeth.
Yeah. I knew that when the door opened and that pilot episode of Columbo, I knew the problems with the gun not having the round in the chamber and all that. I knew that was going to happen. I saw that once when I was 5 after my bath. But no, Shakespeare, nothing. I know I've seen Othello, but couldn't tell you what the story is.
So what do you think of this? The creator said that Father Ted was supposed to be a parody of sitcoms to point out how dumb they were. And something that I stumbled across, I can't remember if it was in the IMDb trivia or somewhere on the Wikipedia page or some link that I followed, some rabbit trail that I followed, trying to make sense, trying to answer the question of why, God, why is this show this bad? But they said they started off wanting to point out, hey, sitcoms are kind of dumb in their structure. And then someone said, well, people will like Father Ted, so just go ahead and, you know, don't do the whole parody thing.
Mm. I think it's still kind of hinted at, though. Because, you know, when you're watching it, I mean, I'm talking as a British viewer here. You know, when you're watching it, you're watching the most absurd sitcom. One of the most absurd sitcoms. There's a variety, and Richard's just named quite a few of the shows in there that would come into the absurd category. And with those kind of characters that have got a little bit of a vile undercurrent. I don't know how this would have changed over time. I don't think it would.
It didn't change over three series,
so there's no sort of space to even think that had Dermot Morgan not died of a heart attack within 24 hours of ending filming on season 3 that things might have changed.
I think that you're suffering from the Heath Ledger syndrome.
No.
You don't think that this show is massively popular still because this person died?
No.
With not that close proximity to the filming?
Not at all. No. It was a sad, sad thing, but we're okay with having a small number of things. You know, we've only got 12 Baltic Towers in existence. So it was really, really sad that there was going to be no more, but it was already huge and winning lots of awards for its writing and popularity and everything. And for Dermot Morgan himself, he did really well out of Father Ted, but unfortunately he was quite ill. So I don't know. It might have been one of those shows that ended the next season anyway.
Because
that's an all right length of time.
How many seasons of IT Crowd did they do in the end? Was it 3 or 4? Something like that. And they could still make those if they wanted. They just don't want to.
Well, most of the time when I do see something like that I do like, some British show it really gets me, the IT Crowd is probably the best one. That's why I keep on mentioning it.
What do you like about it?
I think that they got the beats down a lot better. And even though there's still I'm not sure whether it's a laugh track or live audience, but even though there's still that laughter to kind of guide you along.
Yeah.
I think that if they took it out, the jokes would be equally funny. And it's not always about making you feel uncomfortable. A lot of the times it's about pointing out the foibles of everyone around them. And there are genuine characters that you like. You're rooting for Roy an awful lot. You can empathize with Roy in ways that you can't empathize with a Father Ted. I mean, how many times have you had to go over and fix your mom's computer and really all that it needed to do was to be rebooted?
Many, many times.
So I think that there's a geek aspect to it where you've had those days where you're just banging your head on your desk saying, please no one ask me how to bring up, you know, the kill screen or how to, you know, I don't know, how to install a driver or anything along those lines.
See, there's an absurd character in that, though, isn't there? You know, with Denham.
Oh, I thought you were going to go the Richard Ayoade way.
Well, he's kind of weird, but we're comfortable with Richard Ayoade's character. We know him and we went to school with him. He's really, really clever, but he's socially the most awkward person in any room at any given moment. But then there's this character of Denham who is just hideous. He has no redeeming features whatsoever. None.
But again,
he's hilarious. He gets some amazing lines.
You like Maurice. You're rooting for Maurice. Maurice is not being mean to everyone around him unless he feels that he's being threatened. He's just uncomfortable. He's the victim. Yeah. You can put yourself in his shoes. And if there's a character that's like that, then Renham, is it Renham or Denham?
Denham. Oh, Renham. Yeah, you're right. Renham.
That's what I thought. Was there a Denham
Industries.
That was in season one?
Yeah, that was Chris Morris. Yeah.
So the guy after, what's his name?
Douglas.
Douglas. That's who I'm talking about. Hideous, hideous, hideous man.
I'd kill for his voice. I would seriously, if you're like, you know, kill this homeless guy and you can talk like that, and like, is anyone watching?
Matt Berry.
Yeah.
And I'd actually say he's probably my favorite part of the show, but only because there's the good to balance out his dickishness. It's not dicks everywhere. It's dicks over there, and the dicks over there are funny. And then there's these other people to root for over here.
I'm stunned at this revelation that we hate that all our big characters are hateful. I found another list: the top 50 British sitcoms of all time. Again, almost exclusively hateful, hateful characters. Ones that I'd forgotten about. Porridge.
Why is he hateful?
Because he's in fucking prison.
Yeah, but why? Yeah, but he's not a hateful bloke. He's really, really lovely.
Okay. That will let me.
I'm going to make a statement that has absolutely no founding, and I'm just going to blurt it out. I think that we over here on this side of the pond are still so hung up on American exceptionalism that we haven't learned how to loathe ourselves. You, on the other hand, have had and lost the world's largest empire, and you have learned how to hate yourselves, to think that you are not the best in the world, and to embrace the dark side of your own characters. That's why you like these characters.
Think, you know what? I'm going to say you're right. I think we're an island mongrel nation that's been had by everyone. We've had everyone and lost, and it's humbling. And
that makes it sound really dirty.
There's that whole attitude of the British stiff upper lip that no matter what's going wrong, you keep your emotions intact and you fight on and you don't ever show emotion and that kind of thing. That's not actually true. We do like the underdog, but we don't mind laughing at despisable people.
I'd also like to add, we didn't lose an empire. We just decided we'd had enough of it.
That's right. And we gave it back. So, you can have a flag, but to keep a little bit of us in the corner.
We're still reasonable. Number one. That's America's problem, is that we refuse to realize that even though we do not have the best schools in the nation, that we still think that we're the number one country in education. That even though we don't have the most educated populace or the richest, I guess we do have the richest populace. Let's see. We have huge crime. We have huge social problems. Our political system is going to pot. But we still think that we're the best. Rah, rah, sisboomba, America's number one.
The
bald eagle image, red, white, and blue never run. The whole thing. We just refuse to believe that we could possibly have problems. We insist on being the good guys. We insist on being the cowboys. We claim to have won World War II all by ourselves without any kind of unilateral support from other nations.
Yeah, that does not go down well over here, by the way. We
claim to be the world police. We are everywhere. If you have a problem in the Middle East, just put boots on the grounds. We'll march into Baghdad. The whole thing. Even though we might be being the bad guys, we still insist on calling ourselves the good guys. And so we demand good guys in our comedy.
I can see that. Yeah, we're a bit more self-effacing than that.
We do like to self-efface.
And I don't think that we've learned how to do that yet. Give it another 20 years. We'll have learned how to do that.
Do you reckon? Do you reckon that's all it takes? Because it's taken us a long time.
But we can help them, Allison.
How can we help them, Rich? By exporting more comedy like this until they fucking get it.
Yeah,
is that how we do it?
My plan was to
make you watch
release
Blackadder back to back with Alan Partridge.
My plan was to release a series of audio recordings onto the internet pointing out all the bad things with America.
Well, I wouldn't do that if I were you.
I've been at it for a while. I feel we're making some headway.
Did you like your trip to Vegas? Because it could be your last.
Yeah,
you point out bad things about Americans, it'll get you on a list.
It nearly did anyway. I am on a fucking list in America, the way they treat me.
Yeah, they had to make a phone call at Manchester
Airport.
They left
a love letter in my case when we arrived in Vegas.
Yeah.
Because they detained me, didn't they?
They did. And I can't stress enough, I'm just releasing files on the internet. I would like to come back to Vegas and the buffets.
Yeah, we very like your buffets.
Much, very much so. Keep it up with the
buffets.
There
weren't enough buffets, but there wasn't enough hours in the day. And that's what Vegas does to you. You're like, why aren't there 40 of these? Yeah.
In spite of everything that I just said, in spite of all the bad things and the damning hypothesis that I put forward for America, I want to close by saying that I think that the creators agree with me that their show wasn't that great.
They don't like their own show? Really?
Did I just drop a bomb?
Yeah, I didn't know that they didn't like their own show.
I don't know if they didn't like it, but here's my evidence. They decided to end it after 3 seasons.
They didn't.
I read said that they had already planned to end it before, Father Ted died.
No, yeah, you're right. They weren't going to make any more. And
the reason they said that, they were ready to walk away after just 3 seasons. I think, 25, 26 episodes? Are there really that many?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there are.
Is because they'd pushed the characters as far as they could go. They couldn't do anything else with the characters. If you can't have your characters be deep enough to sustain more than 25 episodes, and the creators admit it, I think that that is very indicative of what kind of show you've got.
Oh yeah, I'm not pretending it's really deep. I think it ran as long as it could run. Because, and I've said this already, it's these characters with these set traits, and we just throw them into a different situation every week, and they react how we expect them to react. And that gets, however funny that might be, that's boring on year 4. You know, you either have to stop doing it or write deeper characters, and it wasn't a show that could have sustained deeper characters, I don't think. I've never had a problem with it ending when it did. I think there is just the right amount of Father Ted in the world, and any more would have ruined it.
So in closing, I will say these episodes were interminable. I literally could not find filthy enough terms for them. And send all of your hate mail to techsupportrich@gmail.com.
Honestly, I told Will and Mike last night that you didn't like it. The look they gave me, it was just as if I'd said something like, you know, Jason likes to steal people's pet kittens.
Why are you consorting with the devil, man?
Why doesn't he like... What? What? Why doesn't he like that? How do you not like that? Well, you have a different sense of humor, I think, is what we've learned. And it's...
I think that this is going to be a divisive one.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's so many things we all like. It's all fine. You know? They're still Trailer Park Boys.
You know, I'm on an article here about Graham Linehan. He's being interviewed, and he's saying that they deliberately didn't do any of the ecclesiastical jokes. So that's why you didn't see him doing Mass, apart from that one time when it deserved to be there. They just didn't want any of the religious stuff in there, really, and they didn't really want to offend anybody, and they didn't really want to make it sacrilegious. And maybe could have strayed into that area. And he's also saying that they couldn't make it like that today.
No.
They'd have to be a lot more sensitive.
Well, yeah, you couldn't make this show in America. Even as clean and away from religion as it was, just by virtue of showing priests being bad people, you're automatically opening up the floodgates for thousands of hate mails.
Maybe that's another reason why it just didn't get over there. Like, who needs that headache to deal with?
Well, what's interesting is at the bottom of this page, if you scroll down, there's a further link. And it's an interview with Catherine Parkinson from the IT Crowd. And her quote is, "I like stuff that's both harrowing and hilarious." I think she speaks for all of us.
Yeah. harrowing and hilarious is what we like. Don't know what to tell you. We just do. So there you go.
So that's been Remote Patrol.
It has.
Sorry, I didn't like it. You know, I'm sorry. I made you.
Well, I feel like I've insulted your child.
No, it's okay. I feel superior to you. That's what's happened. You don't get it. You know.
It's fine.
I do.
It's fine.
That means I'm better than you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You're just wrong, Jason.
You're just wrong.
I think that's what we found out.
I'm willing to accept that. I mean, that is a real possibility.
I wish you could see my face. I'm saying all of this with love and a smile.
But deep down, you really do mean it.
Well, kind of, because I'm British. Yeah, I kind of do, yeah.
I do not like it. I don't know. You know, when he's piling the boxes up on the other side of the street and everything. That's fucking hilarious. I just don't know what to tell you. Yeah, anyway, you've got a show to do. Okay. Let's call
let's
time
feck
on
off.
This. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.